went to the time limit. That is John Slaughter. That's Poetic Justice. Hey, make sure you check us out next Thursday. We're going to be in the building. Hey, it's a different theme. Hey, same show, same time. Hey, let's go. John Slaughter. Yeah.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Good morning. It's 8:59. You're listening to KBOO Portland, and it is going to be hot and smoky and sunny and 105 degrees. Voices at that press watch is coming up at 9 o'clock, just in a couple of minutes. Teresa Mitchell brings you the news you're not supposed to know. Air Cascadi at 10, at 10:15, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11 on Between the Covers, author Julie Israel talks about her new book, Jupiter Lemon's Happiness Index, a story of grief, friendship, and secrets. And at 11:30, it's Black Book Talk. Rebroadcasts its interview with Portland poet, actor, vocalist, and author Mario DePriest about his book, The Power of a Rose, what he calls an attempt to interject a calming breeze of romantic hope into a world of turbulence. And that's what we do at KBOO. We interject calming breezes of romantic hope, and we thank all of our great donors for helping us do that. And if you'd like to be on that team, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate. It's 9 o'clock.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Sunfest, August 4th through 6th at Mountaindale Sun Resort, one of the first nudist clubs in Oregon. Sunfest 2017 has a Roaring Twenties theme featuring camping, jazz, dancing, nude Olympics, and more. Again, that's Sunfest, the weekend of August 4th through the 6th at Mountaindale Sun Resort, 27100 Northwest Dairy Creek Road in North Plains, Oregon. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left-opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. Well, I had cooked up a show with certain topics, but as sometimes happens, events have superseded my little agenda, so I'm going to start with the warning from the Department of Environmental Quality. There are red conditions in the Portland area. Now, this means that particulates and ozone, etc., are being detected at levels, in other words, smoke, that is quite unhealthy. They are reading up to 177 on their particles scale. To give you an idea of how bad that is, when it's normal, the readings are more like 42. So things are really bad. This is from what's left of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration for the Portland area. Urgent fire weather message. Very hot temperatures with low humidity will affect the region this week. A thermal trough has set up west of the Cascades and will drift over the Willamette Valley overnight to over the Cascades during the day. This will bring very unstable low-level conditions to the area through today, increasing the likelihood of plume-dominated fire activity, mainly during the afternoons and evenings. The red flag warning remains in effect until 11 p.m. Today. for significantly unstable conditions. This means if you're thinking of lighting up a campfire, well, just don't. There is instability, they write, mid-level Haynes 6 and high-level Haynes 5 or 6 conditions, whatever that means. I'm sorry, I don't know. Will produce an unstable atmosphere conducive for rapid fire growth. Humidity will be as low as 10 or 20%. The timing will be through tonight, through the evening, with main impacts during the afternoons and evenings. Conditions may be favorable for rapid spread on any new and existing fires. Extreme fire behavior is possible. Outdoor burning is not recommended. A red flag warning means that critical fire weather conditions are either occurring now or will shortly. A combination of strong winds, low relative humidity, and warm temperatures can contribute to extreme fire behavior. And this means, of course, fires just pretty much exploding. Continuing from NOAA, very hot temperatures for the remainder of the week. This applies to the Coast Range and pretty much where you can hear my voice on broadcast. Excessive heat warning remains in effect until 11 p.m. tonight. No, 11 p.m. Friday, excuse me. Record high temperatures expected inland again, with temperatures climbing 103 to 106. Ironically, the smoke is reducing temperatures in places. Today and Thursday will be the hottest days, with record-setting high temperatures and poor overnight recovery. The elderly, people without access to air conditioning, and anyone engaged in prolonged outdoor activities will be particularly vulnerable during this heat episode. Local power demand is expected to be at high levels. I noticed yesterday that the Mercado was shut early. That's a good idea. An excessive heat warning means that a prolonged period of dangerously hot temperatures will occur. Hot temperatures will create a dangerous situation in which heat-related illnesses are likely. Drink plenty of fluid, stay in an air-conditioned room, stay out of the sun, check up on relatives and neighbors. You could go hang out at one place or another, the library. You could go, if you live over by the one of those giant cinemas, for example, you could just go in there and say, I'm here to play the video games. Whatever. Just get out of the heat. Young children and pets should never be left unattended in vehicles under any circumstances, they write, even for short periods of time. And then continuing with the air quality alert, also from NOAA and Department of Environmental Quality, the Southwest Clean Air Agency, and Lane Regional Air Protection Agency have issued an air quality alert, which is in effect till 7 p.m. Friday. Wildfires burning in the region combined with forecasted conditions will cause air quality to reach unhealthy levels at times through Friday evening. Pollutants and smoke can cause burning eyes, runny nose, aggravate heart and lung diseases, and aggravate other serious health problems. We're talking about asthma, of course, as well. Limit outdoor activities. Keep children indoors if it is smoky. Please follow medical advice if you have a heart or lung condition. Now skipping to the Oregonian. Samantha Matsumoto has been writing about this. And it's the smoke from the Indian Creek fire, the Whitewater fire. I'm just skipping around in her article. And wildfires in Canada and northern Washington that have hung over the Portland area. And I would add, speaking for myself, that obviously that Indian Creek fire and other fires are blowing in through the gorge. And when I give you those high particulate readings, that's not true everywhere in Portland. And it might be that where you're at, you feel okay, but the stuff is going to pool in various areas and be much worse. There are several reading stations for DEQ, and if you pull that up on their website, you can see that most of those in the Portland area are in the red, and there are areas just a few miles away that are in the green and that are okay. But if you feel like the smoke is a strain on you, then you're probably right. The smoke prompted the environmental quality department in Oregon to issue an air pollution advisory. Several wildfires and hot, dry conditions across the state prompted Governor Kate Brown to declare a state of emergency in Oregon Wednesday. So that continues today. And in the Oregon Live article, record-breaking heat, continued hot weather, and forecasts for thunderstorms have put Oregon in critical danger of fires. Quoting Brown, as Oregon faces a near record-breaking heat wave, the threat of wildfires increases. And she said, I am thankful to the firefighters and crews working tirelessly throughout the state and remind all Oregonians to be safe and follow posted fire bans. Brown's declaration allows the Oregon National Guard to mobilize resources to assist the State Department of Forestry and the State Fire Marshal's Office. Several trails near Crater Lake are closed. As crews fight the Spruce Lake fire, the Burt Creek Trail is closed. The Pacific Crest Trail is closed from Lightning Springs Trail north to Red Cone Camp, and Bald Crater Loop Trail is closed from the Pacific Crest Trail to Burt Creek Trail. Now, a lot of people walk those trails this time of year for their recreation and health, and can't get through in places today. The Spruce Lake fire is supposed to be 5% contained, which is to say it's 95% uncontained. Some homes and other buildings are threatened. So a real fire problem here as we approach worsening global warming in this, our only planet. Now, if you look in the mainstream news and the corporate media, you will see article after article about the dictator Maduro, who is crushing the people of Venezuela. This is utter crap. Again, in order to counter this, I urge you to turn to YouTube and to use their search bar and to put in the terms Venezuela, and then the revolution will not be televised, because that is the, as I've been saying week after week, trying to counter this mainstream narrative, this corporate media and Pentagon narrative, CIA narrative. There was a film crew, an Irish film crew, that just happened to be doing a documentary. This is life in Venezuela. This is what the government's like, because they're slightly socialist, so we'll go and have a look at them. Cameras were rolling while the U.S. instigated a coup back in 2002. I believe it was April 2002. And it was fascinating. And the Irish film crews were incensed by this when they could see just how manipulative and dismissive of people's democratic rights the CIA was being. And so that was back when Hugo Chavez was president. And they just rolled camera, basically. And also they spliced in some ABC and NBC News cuts and showed how you were being utterly lied to about how those, you know, dastardly commie dictators were taking over Venezuela, when actually the CIA was instigating a coup and using the richest sector, the richest 5% of Venezuelans who are connected to the oil industry and to the CIA and to the United States and not loyal to their own countries, very traitorous to their own countries, to their own country, how they were all working together to destroy democracy. And you can see it play out second after second. Hugo Chavez snatched away by traitorous generals as the U.S.-supporting, CIA-supporting television station blasts their victory. And then it all got turned around because the Venezuelans decided, hey, we're not putting up with this. We're taking Hugo Chavez back. They grabbed a helicopter, flew to an island where Hugo Chavez had been taken away, and took him back. And they said, we're not going to do this. And the coup was thwarted. And so this is exactly what is happening again. It's the same coup. The similarities are just almost endless. Of course, there's differences. But pull up YouTube, put in Venezuela in the search bar, put in the revolution will not be televised. And you can see that movie. It's quite something. This from VenezuelaAnalysis.com. The U.S. government slapped sanctions on Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro one day after the South American country saw record turnout in the National Constituent Assembly elections, that's the ANC elections. Don't confuse that with the African National Congress, of course. National Constituent Assembly elections amid deadly opposition violence. On Monday, the U.S. Treasury Department labeled the elected Venezuelan leader a dictator and froze his alleged assets in the United States. The measure was legally authorized under the Executive Order 13692, which is signed by President Barack Obama in 2015 and brands Venezuela an unusual and extraordinary threat to U.S. national security. And speaking for myself, that shows that it ain't a Trump thing, particularly. Trump probably didn't know how to spell Venezuela before this week. And this is just something that the U.S. does continuously because they're not happy that Venezuela would prefer that some of the oil profits from their relatively low-grade oil be kicked back into their society just because it came from their land. They don't quite see the logic of everything that they own being sucked away to giant U.S. corporations for the sake of the profit of very rich people in a foreign land. Returning to the article, for his part, Maduro fired back at the White House, calling the move an expression of impotence and desperation. Quoting Maduro, "The U.S. sees Latin America as a lapdog that wags its tail and nods yes. It's an irate reaction because the Venezuelan people and its president disobeyed the U.S. in order to suspend the National Constituent Assembly. I don't obey imperial orders," he said. "And moreover, I am against U.S. imperialism," end quote. So you can see how that got him in trouble. Returning with the article, the sanctions come on the heels of the constituency elections that saw 8 million Venezuelans turn out to vote, a figure that surpasses the 7.5 million that Maduro received in his narrow 2013 election victory. In the lead-up to the elections, Washington sanctioned 13 top Venezuelan officials and threatened strong and swift economic actions if the initiative to redraft Venezuela's constitution went ahead. And by the way, speaking for myself, the initiative to redraft is in the constitution, and it's considered far healthier, certainly Thomas Jefferson considered it healthier, to revise things, to redo things periodically. And he has that famous quote, "watering the tree of liberty." So you can read that entire article at VenezuelaAnalysis.com. And just about everything else you can find on Venezuela is utter corporate imperialist crap. And you can quote me. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. It's 15 minutes after the top of the hour here in the Pacific end of the country. This is August 3rd. At 10 o'clock, we're going to have Air Cascadia, but at 9:30, Per Fogring is going to come into the room, and we're going to talk about a character that Per knows about, Timmy the Woodhooker. And that's a little teaser to let you know that 2 weeks from now, Per is going to be back, and it's going to be Fight the Empire. And so you'll be glad to know that that will be happening again on KBOO Portland. At 10, Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, Between the Covers, talking to author Julie Israel about her new book. And 11:30, Black Book Talk, rebroadcasts its interview with Portland poet, actor, vocalist, and author Mario DePriest about his book, Power of a Rose. KBOO keeps you informed and involved, and we need your help. Go to kboo.fm and click on Donate to become a member. And look for the Fuzzy Boo. The Fuzzy Boo is pretty close to the studio just now. I can give you a big old hint. We'll be here for another hour or so. We're going to use it to load up some books for the book sale, which is coming up on the 18th. And don't forget, we are going to have a pledge drive starting, I think, the 25th. So if you haven't made arrangements, if you're a volunteer at KBOO, or if you want to be, then call us up at our main number and make arrangements with a volunteer coordinator to help us out, because we certainly appreciate that sort of thing. And that's how we do this. That's how we do community radio. That's how I'm able to come here and know that I'm going to have a slot every week, so that I go and sharpen my skills on the web and other media sources, and find out what's really happening and try to present it to you as the news you're not supposed to know. It all depends on volunteers. It all depends on your contributions. So, continuing with news items, the state of Missouri, according to TheRoot.com in an article by Monique Judge, the state of Missouri has earned the dubious distinction of being the first ever state to have a travel advisory issued against it by the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, the NAACP, due to a recent string of both directly and indirectly state-sanctioned racist and discriminatory incidents. The Kansas City Star reports that the advisory was circulated in June by the Missouri NAACP and picked up by the national organization late last month. State NAACP leaders told the Star that the decision to issue the advisory was made after recent legislation passed in the state, which made it harder to win discrimination suits, the long time and continued racial disparities in traffic enforcement, and a number of incidents that exemplify harm coming to both minority residents and minority visitors to the state. One of the incidents cited by the organization is the death of 28-year-old Tori Sanders of Tennessee, whose wrong turn while traveling ended through the state. Ended with him dying in a rural jail 150 miles south of St. Louis. The president of the Missouri NAACP asked the Star newspaper, quote, "How do you come to Missouri, run out of gas, and find yourself dead in a jail cell when you haven't broken any laws?" End quote. And quoting more from Rod Chappell, president of the NAACP, you have violations of civil rights that are happening to people. They're being pulled over because of their skin color. They're being beaten up and killed. We are hearing complaints at a rate we haven't heard before. According to the Star, national delegates from the NAACP voted to adopt the advisory, and the national board will ratify it in October. The advisory, quoting Chappell, is for people to be aware and warn their families and friends and coworkers of what could happen in Missouri. People need to be ready, whether it's bringing bail money with them or letting relatives know they are traveling through the state, end quote. And that is not from 1948. It is from right now, 2017. Well, now speaking of corporate media, there's a great deal of hype about North Korea lately. Don't believe the hype about a North Korean ICBM threat. You are not in danger from North Korean intercontinental ballistic missiles. Reason being, as such, despite all the hype, they don't exist. There are a number of very expensive things that the North Koreans have to fix before they can launch a nuclear weapon across continents on one of their missiles. Their missiles are quite impressive, considering they're done on the cheap. You can get these things into above the atmosphere, into near orbital space. That's quite impressive, considering this is one of the poorest nations on Earth. First, however, their guidance systems obviously need a great deal of improvement on reentry, and that's probably an understatement, since all of their reentry vehicles have gone snap, crackle, pop with the heat of atmospheric reentry abrasion. That's quite a trick, fixing reentry. Reentry, you've got to have a stable vehicle with your nuclear bomb. It has to have a shield that can remove most of the heat, or enough. It has to be able to take a great deal of vibration and shaking, and then its systems have to hurl the fissionable materials under neutron reflecting conditions to create a hypercritical reaction and a nuclear explosion. That's quite a trick. It's not that it's technologically unattainable. It's just very expensive to make the thing work right. It would be as if you wanted to start a car company with the amount of money that you got from inheriting grandma's house. You'd have a hell of a time doing it because you don't have enough R&D money and testing money to get something right. You really need large industrialized country type of money, and North Korea ain't a large industrialized country. So the U.S. and the USSR, the former USSR, dropped billions on ceramic heat shields and gadgetry that could withstand the heat and violent shaking on reentry. That's not easy to pull off when you've just now managed to create fission explosions, and they're not very big fission explosions in terms of that, in that category. The equipment now weighs tons. They can say they miniaturized it, and it's highly unlikely that they're saying that they're telling the truth. It is likely that they have a couple of low yield, big as cars devices. And when I say low yield, it's still enough to destroy a city. They could deliver a few hundred miles south with a jet, perhaps, or a ship, or by pushing it through a tunnel. But they're not going to be vaporizing the U.S. anytime soon. Forget about that. Their missiles can't lift all that stuff, and they can't keep it working as it comes falling through the atmosphere. On the other hand, the Rumsfeld-Cheney school thinkers in the Pentagon and the Rump administration might be tempted to set off a nuke and blame Pyongyang. Their power, their social and political power, would be unassailable after that. That would kind of put a stop of all the jokes about Trump now, wouldn't it? I have no evidence they're doing that, but I have evidence that they're fools. The U.S. needs to stop its terrifying nuclear war games on the North Korean border. There's no reason to panic over North Korean nuclear capacity. We'll just have to live with it, as we do with Russian and Chinese nukes. The equation is the same. No one wants to use them because of massive retaliation. I have more on the situation. One reason I'm bringing this up is the Bonhomme Richard, which is a giant aircraft carrier, what is called a helicopter carrier or a marine carrier, has been involved in vigorous invasion exercises in Australia. There was a huge, huge exercise there. There are submarines in the Pacific, among them the USS Asheville, Well, here's a list of them. The USS City of Corpus Christi, Houston, Olympia, Louisville, Asheville, Jefferson City, Columbus, Santa Fe, Tucson, Columbia, and Cheyenne are all in the Pacific. And that's a list of those that are stationed in Japan. So all of those are active and available. Particularly the Cheyenne seems to be deployed. These are submarines that could launch a sudden sneak attack on North Korea using cruise missiles. Richard Sokolowski and Aaron David Miller write in 38 North, which is, by the way, if you want to know what's going on in North Korea, this is a good website, 38north.org. They write, is the Trump administration seriously contemplating changing the regime in North Korea? Frankly, the signals are mixed. 10 days ago at Aspen Security Forum, CIA Director Mike Pompeo intimated as much, saying that he and other senior officials were ordered by President Trump to find a way to separate the North Korean regime from its missiles and nuclear weapons. And indeed, only a few days ago, Vice President Mike Pence said that all options are on the table in countering the North Korean threat, the old options on the table statement. But only yesterday, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson declared, this is actually 2 days ago, we do not seek a regime change. We do not seek a collapse of the regime. We do not seek an accelerated reunification of the peninsula. We do not seek an excuse to send our military north of the 38th parallel. Perhaps, they write, this ambivalence and confusion reflects a healthy debate on North Korea policy within the administration. We hope so. Now, there is much more to that article, and I don't think I'm going to have time to pass all of that along. So now I'm going to change topics. It's 9:25, and I'll be joined by Per Fagering in about 5 minutes. I want to read to you an article from the VIPS. This is the, what does that stand for? Veterans for Intelligence Policy. Well, I forget what it stands for. It's Intelligence Veterans. They have a certain history. In the Reagan administration, the ex-CIA agent John Stockwell started gathering ex-CIA agents who were appalled at the excesses of imperialism and started organizing them. And that led to a couple of different organizations, and this would be about the third that I'm aware of. VIPS consists of Skip Folden, Matthew Ho, Larry C. Johnson, Michael S. Kearns, John Kiriku, yes, that John Kiriku, who was arrested for being dissenting while black, Linda Lewis, Lisa Ling, Edward Loomis, David McMichael, yes, that one, Ray McGovern, Elizabeth Murray, Colleen Rowley, a whistleblower well known now, C.N. Westmoreland, Kirk Weeb, Sarah G. Wilton, and Anne Wright, and they say that the... they say essentially that the whole Russia through the election thing is bogus, and they have the evidence to prove that it is made up out of whole cloth. They write, Secretary of State Colin Powell addressed the United Nations on February 5th, 2003, citing satellite photos which supposedly prove that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction, but the evidence proved bogus. The January 6th intelligence community assessment by handpicked analysts from the FBI, CIA, and NSA seems to fit into the same agenda-driven category. And, of course, they're talking about the Russia through the elections thing. It is largely based on an assessment, they write, not supported by any apparent evidence that a shadowy entity with a moniker Guccifer 2.0 hacked the DNC on behalf of Russian intelligence and gave the DNC emails to WikiLeaks. The recent forensic findings have put a huge dent and that assessment and cast serious doubt on the underpinnings of the extraordinarily successful campaign to blame the Russian government for hacking. The pundits and politicians who have led the charge against Russian meddling in the U.S. election can be expected to try to cast doubt on the forensic findings if they ever do bubble up into the mainstream media. But the principles of physics don't lie, and the technical limitations of today's internet are widely understood. We are prepared to answer any substantive challenges on their merits. They write to the president saying, you may wish to ask CIA Director Mike Pompeo what he knows about this. Our own lengthy intelligence community experience suggests that it is possible that neither former CIA Director John Brennan nor the cyber warriors who worked for him have been completely candid with their new director regarding how this all went down. The independent forensic work just completed focused on data copied, not hacked, by a shadowy persona named Guccifer 2.0. And speaking for myself, what this boils down to is, given the amount of time that the computer show was necessary to bring the information out, this was not done over the internet, which would have been slower. It was downloaded into probably a thumb drive. And that's how that much data got into the thumb drive. And I am summarizing now because I'm running out of time. But I think that you want to see this article by VIPS. And if you pull up Intelligence and VIPS on the web, then you will find that. And the getting down to the details, the Russians, they write, were the ideal culprit. And after WikiLeaks editor Julian Assange announced on June 12, 2016, we have emails related to Hillary Clinton, which are pending publication. Her campaign had more than a month before the convention to insert its own, quote, forensic facts, end quote, and prime the media pump to put the blame on, quote, Russian meddling, end quote. And there's also an article by Mike Whitney in Counterpunch that points out a man named Craig Murray should be interviewed about all of this. And he says he met the person who took the emails from the DNC in a wooded area in Washington, D.C. last year. In other words, Murray can settle this matter once and for all and put an end to this year-long witch hunt that has consumed the media in Capitol Hill. This is not a pro-Trump broadcast, by the way. But neither is it a pro-Hillary Clinton broadcast, and so I want you to know the truth. So look to Counterpunch, look to VIPS, find the truth. This Russia story is complete bunkum. And now I'm joined by Per Fogring, who's coming in the room, and I would ask the engineer to run a bit of music and give us a bit of setup time, and we'll get going with that.